Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah at the top of Daf Mem Beis. Before we begin the actual text, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading. Hamudar Hano War Michael Mechavero. Someone imposed by virtue of a vow, the prohibition of either all benefit or food-related benefit from his friend, lifnei shvius, before the Shemitah year, or b'shvius, or the vow is imposed on the Shemitah year. We should point out that a Shemitah year, also known as the sabbatical year, is a year in which agricultural activity is prohibited. And for our sugya, the main point that needs to be emphasized is that your property is considered unowned. In other words, your fields, the trees and the fields in which the trees grow is considered unowned, and hence it's available for the public to benefit from it. Now the Mishnah. Hamudar Hano Mechavero. A person imposed a vow prohibiting him to benefit. Now notice we've squiggle underlined the word Hano. This is going to be in contrast with the second part of the Mishnah where the vow was a prohibition of food benefit as opposed to general Hano, general deriving of pleasure. So a person imposed this vow, depriving his friend to benefit from him. Lifnei shvius, eino yored lesoch sodeo v'eino ochel min hanoitois. The vow, if it's taken before the Shemitah year, your fields are considered your property, obviously. It's not the Shemitah year. So you took the vow before the Shemitah year. Now, when the Shemitah year comes, the fellow upon whom the vow was imposed, and hence cannot benefit from you, the Mishnah says, Eino yored l'sof sodeo, that fellow, the subject of the vow, cannot go into your field. He can't even walk through the field. The walking through someone else's property is called drisas haregel, or easement rights. That is prohibited in the case of a vow. The eino ochel min hanotos, nor can the subject of the vow eat from the fruits that are growing on branches that extend beyond the borders of the field. Notos means they lean over the fence, if you will. They lean over the border onto the main road. Rashi, on the third line from the top, says, V'ein oichel min hanotos, me oison peros hanoitin chutz l'sode, from those fruits that are bent on a branch beyond the borders of the field, shiocho likach me'en ve'en otzoch likones besoch ha'sode. Physically speaking, those fruits are accessible without going into the owner's field. V'afagav dehen shvias, even though right now it's the Shemitah year, lo yochal mehen, the subject of the vow upon whom the vow is imposed, cannot eat from those fruits. Kidamrina b'gemara, odom oiser dover shevrushuso. This is a principle that the Gemara will develop, that a person can impose restriction on an item while it's in his domain, afilu l'chshietzim rushuso, and that prohibition, that restriction, will continue even if the item in question is no longer in the original owner's domain. And in this case as well, since the vow was imposed before the onset of the Shemitah year, while the produce was still in the owner's possession, the trees, the fields were still in the owner's possession, even when the Shemitah year comes, since the vow was instituted, was imposed before the onset of Shemitah, the prohibition remains through the Shemitah year. The Mishnah continues, Ubashvius, if the vow was imposed on the Shemitah year, Eino yored l'soch sodeu, aval oichel hu min hanoitois. This needs a little more explanation than the mere translation that you see in the words of the Mishnah. But first the translation, if the vow was imposed during the Shemitah year, so the subject cannot walk through the field, but he is allowed to eat from the fruits. You see, during the Shemitah year, those fruits, the notos, that the literally notos is they're hanging over beyond the boundary of the field, those fruits are not owned by the owner. So it's not his to prohibit. And hence the Mishnah says that the vow prohibiting benefit will not prohibit the subject from picking fruits from the tree on the Shemitah year, since the vow was made on the Shemitah year when the original fellow is not the owner of it. It's not his to aser, for it's not his to prohibit. The issue concerning why is he nevertheless able to restrict him from walking through the field, so hopefully we'll get to that a little bit later. Nodar Heimenu Michael. Now notice the change in content of the vow. Mr. A imposes prohibition on Mr. B from benefiting from Mr. A's food. And the vow was made with Neshvius. Yored Lusoch Sodehu. The subject of the vow is able to walk through the field. Walking through the field has nothing to do with food per se. And only food was prohibited. So he can walk through the field, but he cannot partake of the fruits. And of course, we're talking about the vow had been imposed before the Shemitah year. Now when the Shemitah year sets in, nevertheless, the subject of the vow cannot eat from the fruits. Ubashvius, if the vow was imposed on the Shemitah year itself, it was instituted on the Shemitah year itself, then yored the ochel. The subject can walk through the field, and he's also able to partake of the fruits, as we explained before. Now, as we go through the sugya, we're going to see references to these names, Rav and Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and hence we've highlighted their names throughout the sugya. And this marking scheme you'll see continues down through Amud Beis. And by the way, if you are interested in accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So on the side of the Gemara, we've indicated this through under our Mivneh heading, where a diamond is featured, and we indicate Havlotas Rav Shmuel Mul Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. We're accentuating or highlighting these names as we go through the sukkah. So now the Gemara. Rav Ushmuel Dami Trevayu, they agree, they both say, Nichosai Olecha. This is the text of the vow. He says, my properties are osur to you. You cannot benefit from my properties. Lifnei Shvius, Ein Yored Lesoch Sodeu, V'eino Ochel Min Hanotos. Afopin Shigia Shvius. The vow was made before the Shemitah year, so the subject of vow cannot go into the field and cannot eat from the notos either, even though the Shemitah year arrives. The im b'shvius nodar, if the vow was made during the Shemitah year itself, ein yored l'soch sodeu aval oichel min hanotos. So the subject is prohibited from going into the field, but he is allowed to eat from the notos. Rav Yochanan v'Reish Lakish dami travayu, nechosai olecha, my property is prohibited to you. Lifnei Shvius, Ein Yored Lesoch Sodeo, V'Ein Oichel Min Hanoitois. So the subject of the vow cannot go into the field, cannot eat from the notos. Higia Shvius, Eino Yored Lesoch Sodeu, Avol Oichel Hu Min Hanotos. Now, notice what we've accentuated with our markings. We're talking about a vow taken before the Shemitah year. What happens upon the onset of the Shemitah year? According to Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, upon the onset of the Shemitah year, the subject is allowed to partake of the notos. Notice, according to Rav and Shmuel, use the markings. That's why we've mapped out the Gemara to make things crystal clear. Under the same circumstances of the vow taken before the Shemitah year, and you notice the dashed underlined Shehigia. What did Rav and Shmuel say about the case of a vow taken before the Shemitah year? The Shemitah year then sets in. That's Higia Shvius. What do they say about the notos? They said, Eino Ochel Min Hanotos. And that's why you can see that with the other kind of dashed underline. So Rav and Shmuel are more restrictive that the vow taken before Shvius, even though the Shemitah year sets in, the vow still holds. It restricts the subject from eating from the notos. According to Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, the vow taken before the Shemitah year, very nice it was taken then, but when Shemitah comes, the subject is allowed to eat from the notos. And now we have to explain what is the basis of this controversy. On the side of the Gemara, we have a mivneh, a structural note. A triangle is featured. Even before we read the note, try with your eyes to scan the upcoming dapim. Notice all the markings, the triangles. The number one is here. You'll see on Omid Beis, three lines from the top, a number two. In the middle of the Omid, a number three. What are we going to be doing? So under the Mivneh heading, we indicate Shalosha Shlovim, three stages. Lahazbir Ma Shalachayra Nira Kemachloikis Rav Shmuel Mu Rav Yochanan Rav Shlokish. Three stages in trying to explain what appears to be a machlokes between these two pairs of Rabbanan, Rav Shmuel versus Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. Certainly the way we read the Gemara, the way the text appears, there is a machlokes. There may be a surprise by the time we get to the end of the sugya. In the meantime, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which dwells on the first approach. Nisayon, an attempt, lahamid machlekusam be'inyanim odom yochol le'esor dover shebirshuso afilu chshietzim yirshuso. This concept we saw already in the Rashi. We read it together. Can a person impose a restriction or a prohibition on an item while it's in his domain, and that restriction shall continue even after the item leaves the original owner's domain? The Gemara. Lema b'hol k'mivligi. Can we say, or shall we say, that the following is the basis of the machlokas? And notice the way we've marked the Gemara. This suggestion lasts, you can see with the long question marking, about five lines. This is a suggestion. The Gemara will then have a problem, will raise a question, which we've also indicated with a long marking on that which we are about to say. So, the suggestion is as follows. Lema b'hol k'mivligi. The Rav Shmuel Savri, they who had said that the neder taken for Shvius, when Shvius comes, the notos remain osir, that Odom oiser dover shebirshuso lafilu l'chashiyetze meirshuso. A person can prohibit something while it's in his ownership, and that prohibition will last even after it leaves his ownership. Shemitah, as we explained before, is an example of something, your fields, leaving your ownership. Rabbi Yochanan of Reish Lakish, who said that when Shvius comes, the vow that had been taken before Shvius does not prohibit the notos. So maybe Savri, maybe they hold Ein Odom Oiser Dover Shabirushuso Lichashiyetse Mirushuso, that a person cannot impose a prohibition on an item while in his domain that should continue, the prohibition continue to after it leaves his domain. So that's the suggestion. Maybe that's the machlokas. The Gemara now asks, in other words, assuming that this is the machlokas, we have a question. This is a long question. I would also like you to note that there are two parts to the question. Part two, you can see we've put in brackets. And the reason for that is that what's raised as a question in part two will also be dismissed as a question. It won't be a problem. However, the original point remains a problem. And you can see that at the second line from the top of Omid Beis. So now, the question. Fitispara, explain yourself. Mi ika lemanda omar ein odom oiser dovor shebushuso lechashietz mirushuso. Could anyone hold like that? That a person cannot impose a prohibition on something that would continue till after it leaves his domain. Now I repeat, can anyone hold that? In other words, we wanted to say that that was the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, that a person cannot, that a person is unable to impose, we'll call it a long-lasting restriction. If that were really so, de'im kain, if that were really so, that a person cannot impose a what we're calling a long-lasting restriction, niflagi b'nechosim elu, the text of the vow. We have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Align this with the star above, and on that line you saw that the vow that had been made was nechosai olecha. My property is prohibited to you. Now, if the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish versus Rav and Shmuel concerns the ability or the inability of a person to impose a long-lasting prohibition, then the text of the vow should have been nechosim elu, meaning these properties, removing the possessive element, namely, these properties are usur. And then Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish would say that even though you refer to them in objective terms, these properties, not relating it to your ownership, and then say that even though you imposed a seemingly long-lasting vow on the properties, these objective properties, and have Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish say regarding a vow like that, that when Shemitah comes, the notos are mutter. And the Gemara goes on, v'kal shekein b'nechosai, and all the more so, you would be ineffective, you would be lacking the ability to impose continued iser if you phrase the original vow in a possessive form, b'nechosai. And why is that? Because when you phrase the vow as my properties, then the inference is only as long as they are your properties is there a prohibition. Once Shemitah comes, they're no longer your properties. They're considered unowned. So that if the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish was like the suggestion of the Gemara, that a person is unable to impose long-lasting restriction, then it would have been, let's say, more elucidating, more emphatic, had the vow been these properties are usur, and then tell me when then the Shemitah comes, the notos are mutter. And all the more so had you said simply nechosai in the possessive form. Of course, then when Shemitah comes, they're no longer your properties, and the notos would be mutter. So that with this question in mind, if you skip the bracketed section of the Gemara momentarily, that takes you to the second line from the top of Omid Beis, the Gemara says, Mikol Mokom Kashya. This question that we're raising right now is a problem. So that it, apparently the position of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish it's not true to say that a person is unable to impose long-lasting restriction, but rather everyone would agree, and the Gemara says this at the second line from the top, if we continue there momentarily, Ela b'nechosim elu kuleyama lo pliki. If the original vow had been stated in the nechosim elu fashion, everyone would agree that a person can impose a prohibition on properties, on items that will last even to a point in time that they're no longer your properties. You didn't make the vow in a possessive form. You made the vow in an objective form. And therefore, everyone will agree that the prohibition that you imposed on those items vis-a-vis your friend and his benefit from them, that prohibition will last on in time even after it leaves your domain, your possession. Then, if that's the case, we'll have to explain what is the machlokes between those two pairs of Rabbanon, and that's the role of the Gemara, three lines from the top of Omid Beis. But in the meantime, we skipped, and I hope everyone is navigating with their marked Gemaras. We continue with the bracketed section, Visu, Ha Disnan. We have a teaching that will be found shortly in a Tanaic source, but the principle is reported first. There, the teaching states, "The Adam Oiser Davar Shebirushuso Lichshietzimirushuso." A person can impose a prohibition on something while it's in his domain, that prohibition lasts even when it leaves his domain. This not, and here we have a Tanaic source that says thusly. So then, if we have a Tanaic source that says a person can impose a long-lasting prohibition, then Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish will be in real trouble, because they were presented as holding that a person cannot do thusly, and they are Amoroyim. Here you have a Tanaic source saying to the contrary. Well, what does it say, Disnan? Ha'imer Livnoi. A person says to his son, Koinim shatonen eli. Koinim is an expression we've seen many times already. It's a vow, the imposition of a prohibition. It's like the word korban, and korban is a sacrifice, and a sacrifice is something that you cannot benefit from. So he says to his son, I am imposing a prohibition on you to benefit from me, from all of my properties. As you can see in the Rashi, Klomar shi'i atonen eli mikol nechosai. Mace, when the father dies, Yerushenu, the son, is able to inherit him. The prohibition was simply, while these properties are mine. That's what the father said, but when he's dead, so he's dead. So they don't belong to a dead man. However, if the vow is as follows, Bechayov uvemoisai, father says to his son that while I'm alive and after my death, I do not want you benefiting from my properties, from the properties. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis, Im meis lo yiroshenu. Upon the father's death, the son shall not inherit him. Notice we've dashed underline in May solution because we want to draw your attention to this being the main problem. This would be the problem for Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Here you see a prohibition imposed on properties that lasts even beyond the original owner's ownership of it. So As far as that question is concerned, shiny ha-ha, this is different to ka'omar le b'chayov uv'moisoi. He spelled out the terms of the vow. He said, b'chayov uv'moso, while alive and after my death. However, if he simply said these properties are also without specifying it in such a way, then a person cannot impose a long-lasting prohibition. That would be Reb Yochanan Reish Lakish's response to this question we call question number two. Mikol Mokom Kashya. However, question number one remains that if in fact Reb Yochanan Reish Lakish were of the opinion that a person cannot impose a long-lasting isur, a long-lasting prohibition, then the text of their original vow, the text should have been Nechosim Elu. Why do they present their position using the less revealing example of Nechosai? The Gemara answers, or continues, Elo b'nechosim elu kulei ama lo pligi. In fact, everyone will agree, even Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish will agree, that a person, if he stated the vow in the objective, general form, namely, these properties, not necessarily while they are mine, but these properties, which right now are yours, these properties are forbidden to you, so everyone will agree that even when they're not in your possession anymore, the vow will continue. The prohibition on the second party will continue. Ki pligi b'nechosai. The machloikas between the two pairs of Rabbanan is in a case where he used that expression. Rav Ushmuel Savri lo ishno nechosim elu v'lo ishno nechosai. Without any we make no distinction between the Nechosim Elu expression and even Nechosai. And here, this is the Chiddush, that even though you said my properties, which left room for a person to think that when they're no longer yours, the prohibition would not exist, not so, says Rav and Shmuel. Adam Oiser, a person can impose a long-lasting Iser, that the properties will remain Oser even when they're no longer capable of being described as Nechosai. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Savri Nechosim Elu. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish are more literal. They say, if you vowed in the Nechosim Elu fashion, Odomoser, then you're speaking about the properties in an objective fashion, so the prohibition that you impose on them while you're the owner of them will last even after they leave your possession. Nechosai, however, if the vow was stated in the possessive form, my properties, eino demoser, then a person cannot impose a long-lasting prohibition, because the term that used in the vow was mashma, implies while they are mine, and only when they're mine are they prohibited, but not after they leave my possession. The Gemara asks a question. Notice the long question marking. Umi ikol amad omar lo ishno nechosim elu v'lo ishno nechosai. Can you present an opinion like we just did in the name, and in this case, Rav and Shmuel, as making no distinction? V'ha tanan. We have a Tanaic source. Ha'oimer lechaveroi koinom. Again, you see the konom expression is the imposition of prohibition. Koinom l'soich beis cho shani nichnas. Sadecho shani lokeach. We're emphasizing the chof at the end of the word because that is the letter indicating possession. The possessive form. And in the vow he says, I impose on myself a restriction not to enter your house, not to enter your field I will not purchase. Meis oishem ochroi liacher, if the owner died, or he sold the house or the field to someone else, mutar. Then the original vower is allowed to go into those areas. They're going to the house or by the field. if the vow is stated as follows, Labayas ze shani nichnas. Notice the squiggle underline on the word ze. That's the objective form, as opposed to before we had the possessive form. Here it's in the objective form. He says, Labayas ze shani nichnas. Sadezuv shani lokeach. I'm not going to walk into this house or this field. I will not purchase. Mase oy shemachroi liacher. If the owner died or he sold those entities to someone else, usher. Notice just by looking at the markings in the first example, in the Aleph example, we had the possessive form and then the transfer of ownership. And we dashed underline mutter. Here you have the objective form, and you have transfer of ownership, and you have usser. So you see that a Tanaic source makes a distinction. How then, in Roman numeral 2, could you have presented Rav and Shmuel, who are Amoroyim, how can you have presented them of making no distinction when a Tanaic source makes a distinction? Elo ki amri Rav Yochanan v'Reish Lakish, and here's stage 3, and here's the surprise we promised. There, in fact, is no machloikis. When Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish spoke about the inability to impose a long-lasting prohibition, that's b'nechosai, because the vower used the possessive form, which means that while they're my properties, you cannot benefit from them. But when Shemitah comes along, they're no longer my properties, they're Hefker. So that's why they said you can eat from the notos. That's why the vow is no longer binding. Rav, the Rav Shmuel, they said you cannot eat from the notos even when the Shemitah year comes, because the text of the vow was B'nechosim Elu. Veloy pligi. That means that these two pairs of Rabbanan are not arguing with one another at all. They're simply talking about different circumstances of the vow, different texts of the vow. The Mishnah said, Ubishvias ein yored lesoch sodeu, avol oichel min hanotos. Notice we have a little arrow that helps you find it back on Omid Aleph, where you saw this on the upper part, third line from the top. The Mishnah had said that if the vow had been taken during the Shemitah year, then the subject of vow cannot go into the field, but he is allowed to eat from the notos. You can't, during the Shemitah year, prohibit eating of food that's not yours. It's hefker. The question, though, is, as we said when we learned the Mishnah, if the vow was taken during the Shemitah year, why is there a prohibition of going into the field? So the Gemara, my shno the oichel min anotos. What is different about eating from the notos, which we say is mutter, is allowed, the peri de hefkera inun, because the fruits are hefker, they're unowned, and inun means they are unowned. And therefore, the vow could not have set in or set upon them to begin with. Aronami afkara, the land also is hefker. So why does the Mishnah say that the subject of the vow cannot go into the field? We have two explanations. Number one, Omar Ula, be'oimdin ilanois al hagvulin. And here we must resort to Rashi's explanation by learning it together. Notice the Rashi across from here. The trees that were described by the Mishnah are standing on the border. The trees are right along the outside of the border of the field, and access to the fruits is gained even without entering the field. You can pick off the fruits from outside. Mishum hachi eino yored. Therefore, the subject of vow does not go into the field. The whole concept of the Torah declaring a person's field unowned during the Shemitah year, it's for eating purposes. And now the entrance to the field wasn't for eating purposes. So that the concept of hefker during Shemitah is a hefker in context, or hefker limited. That it's, yes, it's unowned with respect to entrance for the field, to the field, when you need to do so in order to gain access to the fruits. But in this case, since the fruits are not in the field, they're all growing along the border, and you have full access to all the fruits without entering the field, so it's not considered hefker vis-a-vis this case. The Gemara continues, number two, Reb Shimon ben Eliyakim Omar, Gzeiro Shemo Yishev Amida. We again look at Rashi, Reb Shimon ben Eliyakim Omar, Hadikotoni Oichem in Anoitos, that which the Mishnah gives permission to eat from the from those bending over branches to outside the field, Vadai Kidiko Amris Kigon de Oindin Alagvulin. It is certainly as we just explained. The trees are standing on the borders. Mishum diyochol lahoshit yado velikach mibachutz. And there's no need to go into the field because you can stretch your arm and pick the fruits from while standing outside the field. Avol ein oimdin al hagvulin. If the trees were not on the borders, eino yored l'soch sodehu, the osur lo leireid l'shom. If the trees were not on the borders, then you would not be allowed to go into the field. Why not? Gezeiro shemo yishev amida. We're afraid that you might tarry in the field after the basic amount of time, the minimum amount of time that you needed to get the to access the fruits. Dilachal, after you ate from the fruits, oimed lo l'sham, you'll continue standing there. Become ishani minachosim de madir, and the subject of vow will benefit from the properties of the owner who imposed a vow, the osir, and that would be prohibited. The high de afkir achmona, the whole concept of the Torah declaring unowned calls man shu oichel while you're eating. Os yocholam od l'sham de hefkerhu avol shelo l'tzrach achilu l'afkire, but for non eating purposes, you have no the Torah doesn't declare the field unowned. So the difference between Ula and Reb Shimon ben Eliyakim will be in a case where you have trees that are not on the border. According to Ula, if the trees are not on the border, so go right ahead into the field. According to Reb Shimon ben Eliyakim, as Rashi explains it, you will not be allowed to go into the field on a, you can see it's an Isur Durabonon, it's a rabbinically imposed restriction for fear that you might tarry in the field beyond the allotted eating time, or the time necessary for the eating, which in fact the Torah does not declare the field unknown. So if you wanted to reduce it to the very simple terms, according to Ula, there is no gzeira of that nature, and according to Reb Shimon Lozer, there is a gzeira. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, Hamudor Hano Mechaveroi, Osur Lamudor Afilu Lahashil Kalim La Madir. Hagamot Tishal Eza Hano Magia Lamudor Mizeh. Mr. A imposes a vow on Mr. B. The Mudar cannot benefit from the Madir, so that Mr. B cannot benefit from Mr. A. The Mishnah will teach us, amongst other things, the Mishnah will teach us that Mr. B cannot loan items to Mr. A. Now, once again, if the direction of the vow is Mr. B cannot benefit from Mr. A, why does the Mishnah teach that Mr. A cannot borrow items from Mr. B? What hanoah is Mr. B getting when he loans his vessels to Mr. A? The Mishnah. Hamudur hanoah mechavero. Mr. B is imposed, upon Mr. B is imposed a vow restricting him to benefit from Mr. A. Lo yashilenu velo yishal mimenu. Two directions. A cannot loan items, vessels to Mr. B, and Mr. B cannot loan and And Mr. A cannot borrow from Mr. B. So Mr. A cannot give to B, nor can Mr. A receive from him. Similarly, lo yulavenu velo yulvamimenu. The difference between yashilenu and yulavenu, yashilenu deals with vessels, with items, and yulavenu deals with cash. So that in English, the term loan and borrow might apply equally to vessels and cash. In Hebrew, there is a different verb for each category. So the second category of the Mishnah has to do with loans. Mr. A cannot loan money to Mr. B, nor can Mr. A borrow from Mr. B. Velo yimkor lo, velo yikach mimenu. Mr. A cannot sell to Mr. B. Mr. A cannot buy from Mr. B. Now the Gemara at the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. Bishlamo, I can understand some of the laws of this Mishnah. Bishlamo lo yulvenu. I understand that Mr. A cannot loan money to Mr. B. To call mahanile. You're giving him benefit. Mr. B needed money, and Mr. A comes along and will give B benefit by loaning him money, and that would be a direct violation of the vow, where Mr. B is not allowed to benefit from Mr. A. So I understand that. Ela lo yilve heimenu mai koma hanile. Why is Mr. A not allowed to borrow from Mr. B? Where is there any hano that Mr. B is getting? And it's the Mefarshim point out that as far as the fact that he's doing a mitzvah, that is not considered hano. There's a concept, mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. We don't have to dwell on that. Just realize that is axiomatic, that the fact that a person is fulfilling a mitzvah is not considered a violation of the vow, which prohibits hano. So far, we have seen that lo yulvehimenu is difficult to understand. And you know what the Gemara says? Even that, we can explain. Ubishlamo lo yulvehimenu velo yikachimenu. Here the Gemara is extremely terse. It doesn't explain how that can be, but you'll see when we look in the Rashi how that can be understood. But first the translation. Not only is it obvious that A cannot loan to B, but you know what? I understand why A cannot borrow money. And I also understand that of course, A cannot sell something to Mr. B, but I also understand why Mr. A cannot buy things from Mr. B. Because in those cases, we can explain how there is hano'o, and that would be a violation, how Mr. B would be benefiting. So let's go over these points. We're taught that Mr. A cannot borrow from B. How is there any benefit to B in that case? The answer is that Mr. A, when he borrows cash from Mr. B, he might be receiving coins that are kind of rubbed out, that are on the verge of becoming, removed from circulation. They're useful right now, but they're rubbed out. When Mr. A comes to pay back the loan, he might be giving Mr. B good quality, freshly minted coins as the payback to the loan. And that's not a problem of ribbis, of interest. Forget about that. That's not an issue right now. The issue is B going to be benefiting from the fact that he's loaning cash to Mr. A? The answer is yes, as we explain. Because as a result of let's say, unloading as a loan the bad quality coins, you're going to get paid back, possibly, good quality coins. And that would be a violation of the vow. Likewise, we understood that A cannot sell items to Mr. B. Mr. B is not allowed to benefit from Mr. A. What about Mr. A buying items from Mr. B? Generally speaking, a person doesn't want to part with his items. How then can Let's assume right now we're not talking in a retail a commercial situation, but between people. People will sell items only when they're, generally speak, only when they're hard pressed for cash. So how is it that, why is it that Mr. A is not allowed to buy items from Mr. B? So Rashi explains, you know why? Because we're talking about a case where the item that Mr. B is selling is called Rumi Alape, an expression we've seen in the past. It's a product for which there's no demand. It's an item that Mr. B is only too happy to get rid of it. So here he's found a customer, Mr. A, and the purchase in this case of Mr. A buying this undesirable vessel or utensil from Mr. B is going to be giving pleasure to Mr. B, which is a violation of the vow. So what we've done so far, as we've explained, there were six cases in the Mishnah. There were three sets. Each set had two directions. So we've basically explained five of the six cases. But there's one case that we don't yet understand. And that's what the Gemara says on the fourth line from the top. Elo lo yishal heimenu mai komis hani mine. That A is restricted from borrowing an item, a vessel, a utensil from Mr. B. What benefit does Mr. B get from that? Whenever you loan out items, the borrower is going to use it, and there is depreciation that sets in. That's natural depreciation through the use of any item. So how then is A's borrowing of a vessel from Mr. B going to be considered a violation of the vow? The vow seemingly stated only that Mr. A cannot give benefit to Mr. B. Here, A is borrowing from Mr. B a vessel, and he'll return to him a depreciated item, which is, of course, that's okay as far as halacha. That's what all borrowing is. But Mr. A isn't giving any benefit to Mr. B. Om Rav Yossi Bar Chanina, kegon shenodru hanoh, zeh mizeh. Oh, Rav Yossi Bar Chanina gives a very simple explanation, which would help to explain the entire Mishnah, that it was a two-way vow, that I don't want to benefit from you, and I don't want you to benefit from me. Abaye Omar, he says, no, it was a one-directional vow. However, gzeira lisho mishum lahashil v'chein bekuhu gzeira. We don't want you to borrow items from Mr. B, because once you borrow from him, you might come to loan him items. And likewise with the other restrictions in the Mishnah, they're gzeiras. Don't get started in something that might seem to be all right, where A is benefiting from Mr. B, because if you allow that, then A will come to give benefit to Mr. B, which would be a prohibition. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.